So, anyone have any questions they'd like to ask, or comments or reports about how the meditation is going at home? Or last week we talked about mindfulness of emotions. So, did you practice that at home, and how was that? You didn't have any emotions, maybe? And yeah.
For me, that was a particularly interesting exercise. When I first got down and meditated for just a couple of days, I couldn't really seem to find the emotions to think about while I was meditating. But after a couple of days, I noticed that in my everyday life, all of a sudden, I was noticing my emotions in my everyday life.
Great.
I'm sure that was a good thing or a bad thing.
Oh, I see. There was a cartoon some years ago by, what was it? This woman goes to a psychic who looks into her bowl. And the woman goes and complains about how her husband, I guess, doesn't talk about his feelings. And so the psychic looks into her bowl and says, "Oh, by November 2004, all the men in America suddenly begin expressing their feelings, and women are forever regretful." I think it's good. I think it's always good. It's always good to know what's going on and to be conscious of it. And once you start being conscious of what's going on, that gives you an opportunity to have a wise relationship to it. But if you're not conscious, then... And there's always an emotion. You're always in an emotional state. Though in meditation, it might not be what you would normally think of as an emotional state. There was on one retreat, there's a story of someone coming to a teacher for an interview and saying, "I'm feeling something really unusual. I don't know what it is, but it's kind of strange how I'm feeling." The teacher said something, "Oh, you should go back and investigate and find out what it is." And then the student came back sometime later and said, "Oh, I know what it is now. I'm feeling calm. And I've never been calm in my life, so I didn't know what it was. I couldn't recognize it." So that even being calm or quiet, you know, it might not be kind of, you know, usual dramatic kind of emotions you're feeling. Also, what you said makes me want to mention this. Different people find that meditation affects or benefits their life in different ways. Some people find that that when you sit down to meditate, their mind is all over the place. Their mind never really seems to get quiet and calm. But the very fact of doing the meditation, doing the best they can, somehow has a direct relationship to the rest of their life going a lot easier. They're more mindful, more relaxed, more calm throughout their day. And they attribute it to the meditation. And some people find that that meditation unfolds very differently. Actually, they actually are able to develop very deep states of concentration, deep states of calm, of insight. And sometimes that is what's really helpful and transformative in their lives. So there's other ways I could say, but there's no single way that meditation or spiritual life based on meditation is supposed to unfold. It unfolds karmically and personally for karmic and personal reasons in a way that's appropriate for you. And so we have to be very careful to honor and respect how it is for you, and not to have some kind of vague, ideal, abstract idea of how it's supposed to be. The emphasis in mindfulness is to always wake up with how things actually are. And if you have an ideal that you're trying to live up to, it's very dangerous sometimes because it can turn your attention away from what's actually here. And if you ever find a conflict between your ideal and what's actually going on, choose the actual in terms of where you wake up, what you pay attention to. And the doorway to liberation, the doorway to deeper spiritual life in Buddhism is through actually what's happening. Not anything else. So if you're waiting in meditation for something to happen, you miss the boat. Because you're waiting for something that doesn't exist yet. It's not actual yet. It hasn't been actualized. You're missing the door of this very moment now. So the actual is actually how you are. And then to be respectful of how you are as an individual. You're going to be different than anybody, other people. And you don't have to have some fixed idea of what a spiritual path is supposed to look like. There are general guidelines and general principles that, you know, you can look at. But you have to be very careful that you're not losing touch with yourself, not that you're somehow not seeing yourself clearly. And, you know, so be careful you're not being very, you know, you're not avoiding being really honest about how you actually are, because you have some ideal you're trying to live up to. That makes sense? Anything else anyone wants to say before we start? Questions or comments? Okay, let's then start with a sitting. I haven't noticed this in Vipassana students, but I noticed this in Zen centers. I spend a lot of time in Zen centers and practicing Zen, is that the longer a person had been a Zen student, the more time they took in getting settled into their meditation posture. You know, and they would go like this, usually rock back and forth for a while, and kind of get all settled, you know. And someone who was new would just kind of... So you might want to consider a little bit the benefits of spending a little bit of time with your body when you sit down and kind of helping it move a little bit. It's a way of helping you get into a good posture and getting into your body. So much of mindfulness depends on being in your body. So then softly close your eyes. And then take a few long, slow, deep breaths. Turning yourself over to your breathing. Almost like as if you're turning yourself inside out with the breath. Take a few more long, slow, deep breaths. And as you breathe in deeply, connect to your body from the inside. Feel how the expansion, the pressure, the movement of the inhalation kind of stretches and opens your body, your torso from the inside. And as you exhale, let your body relax. Maybe different parts of your body, your shoulders, you can soften a little bit. Your belly, letting your stomach hang forward, loose, relaxed. As you exhale, soften your face. And then letting your breathing return to normal. No particular way you need to breathe for mindfulness, just a normal, ordinary breath. No special effort in breathing. And it's also sometimes helpful at the beginning of a meditation session to have kind of a global awareness of your body. It could be a very global overall sense, or it could be kind of letting the attention wander around the body, just touching in, becoming familiar with your body, awakening it with your awareness, exploring it, just sensing how your body is right now. And then within your body, as part of your body, become aware of your breathing. Become aware of how your body experiences your breathing. And you might be aware of the breath body, the overall sensations of breathing in, the belly expanding and contracting, the chest expanding and contracting, lifting and falling, the sensations of air going in through your nostrils and back of your throat. Or you might be aware of one particular area that's most pronounced, the chest or the belly or the nostrils. Whichever way is most natural to you, most compelling, let that be your home base, your native way of feeling your breathing. And let yourself be attentive to the breath, carried along by each in-breath and out-breath. Letting the rhythm of breathing help calm your thinking mind, while at the same time helping you to be more alert so the calm mind doesn't lead to a sleepy mind. Enter into the world of your breathing. Become your breathing. Be aware of each breath. When the mind wanders off into thought, and you notice that, begin again with your breathing. Let go of your thinking and invite back your breathing into your awareness. Invite it in clearly and fully, and then sustain your attention with the breathing. Continue with staying present for your breathing. But now, if when your mind wanders away from the breath and is caught up in its thoughts, very clearly recognize that you are thinking. And very softly whisper in the back of your mind, acknowledge that thinking with the word thinking, thinking, thinking. And then beginning again with your breathing. But kind of like look head on at this phenomena of thinking. No need to judge it or criticize its presence. But very clearly see and acknowledge this is what's going on. This particular time and place. There's a human being who's having these kinds of thoughts. And you're acknowledging the phenomena of thinking. Name it a few times, and then begin again with your breathing. And then now for the end of this sitting, let go of any attempt to be with your breathing. And let yourself think as you wish. No attempt to even let go of your thoughts. And when you do start thinking, explore the phenomena of thinking, like you've never really looked at it carefully. Not so much what you're thinking, not the content of your thoughts, but the process of thinking. So, for example, you might be aware of the energetics of thinking. The sensations in your body, the strength of your thinking. Is it subtle? Is it strong? Is it compulsive or hesitant? Is there any pressure associated with thinking? Your forehead or in your skull or your jaws or your throat or your shoulder? And as you're watching your thinking, see if you can listen in a sense to what the inner voice is like that's doing the speaking of your thoughts. If you think in words, listen as if you're listening to another person's voice, the quality of their voice. What is the quality of that voice that does the thinking? Is it harsh, gentle, loving? Is it judgmental or is it accepting? Soft, rough, harried or confused, settled, stable, clear. What's the quality, the characteristic of that inner voice that does the thinking? And see if you can do this exercise without any judgments or reactions to what you're aware of. Somehow explore the process of thinking as if you were a scientist or naturalist, with a sense of discovery, as if it's for the first time. What is the felt sense of thinking. And then in the last minute of the sitting, let go of thinking, let go of whatever thoughts are there, and immerse yourself as thoroughly as you can with your breathing. If any little thoughts appear on the edges of awareness, let them go. Reapply yourself more fully with the breath for a full minute, just breathing. As I think all of you know, most religions have something they consider to be sacred, something or some dimension of life, of reality. Probably what qualifies as the most sacred thing in the Buddhist tradition is awareness, or liberated awareness. And what makes awareness sacred is, or what makes liberated awareness liberated, is that it's all-encompassing. There's no forces within it of greed or hate or aversion, fear, which somehow constrain or constrict the awareness. So everything in your everything is included within it. There's not, no outside. There's nothing which is unacceptable to awareness. And what we're training ourselves to do in mindfulness practice is discover the capacity to enter the sacred world of all-encompassing awareness, an awareness that can include anything within it, not keep anything out. In that process, sometimes things that we have a lot of power over our lives, voices or values or priorities or views, get revealed. Because some things work only when they're off stage, kind of directing the show. I think of the movie Wizard of Oz, and they finally make it to the Grand Wizard. And he's very kind of loomingly large presence, you know, this big mask on the wall and big booming voice. And until Toto goes and pulls the curtain. And he's just a little guy from Kansas, right, kind of behind the curtain, pulling the levers. And somehow he loses some of his great aura of power and prestige when they actually see who he actually is directly. So mindfulness is a process of slowly learning to pull the curtains from that which is off stage, in a sense. So we can learn to include everything. And so the demons sometimes get revealed. And sometimes our amazing degree of beauty within us gets revealed, because usually we keep it off stage. So everything gets included in mindfulness. There's no outside. So in terms of, you know, pure vipassana practice or mindfulness practice, any part of our humanity, any part of our human experience can be seen as part of the practice itself. It's just another thing to be aware of. So thoughts are that way. Thoughts are something to include as part of the practice, not something to exclude or to judge as being, you know, bad or wrong, be thinking. There's a lot of people who meditate or are introduced to meditation or have some kind of general idea of it, who think that if they're thinking, that they're not meditating, or they're at war somehow with their thoughts. It makes some sense to have that attitude, because often it's the thinking that kind of takes us away constantly from the breath or the focus or the mantra or whatever it might be. In certain meditations, which are concentration meditation, where you're trying to really stay only focused on one thing at the exclusion of everything else, then our thoughts can be problematic and be kind of at war with our thoughts. But mindfulness practice, you don't want to be in conflict with anything when you do mindfulness practice. And we're not only trying to develop an exclusive awareness that's focused only on one thing. The breath is very useful as a grounding place. But we want to be able to open the awareness to include even our thinking and be mindful of thinking, as opposed to kind of thinking, well, I'll only be mindful if I don't think. Then some people, when they bring their attention to thinking as part of mindfulness, they have the attitude, oh, if I do it, then my thinking will stop. I'll figure out some way to get rid of it. If I pay careful attention, I'll stop thinking. There's kind of be subtle or gross kind of an aversion there, and a kind of idea, an ideal, oh, this is the way it's supposed to be. Pure mindfulness is simply to notice clearly what is actually happening in the present without needing or without having any agenda that it should be different. It will become different on its own, but it's not your job to want it to be different, to expect it to be different. So if you find yourself thinking very actively or whatever, you don't have to have some idea this is wrong or bad meditation or you're unspiritual or anything. It's just something else to notice clearly this is what's happening right now. Sometimes for myself, if I'm caught in the bouts of some kind of very compulsive, obsessive kind of thoughts, I'll step metaphorically back in my mind or back and kind of take a bird's eye view and say to myself sometimes, wow, 5 billion years of evolution have come down to me obsessing about what to have for dinner. Isn't that amazing? Wow, can you imagine? You know, of all these 5 billion people on the planet or whatever, one of them is having these kind of planning thoughts, you know, planning something in the future. And sometimes taking that kind of bird's eye view of the fact that I'm thinking, kind of, you know, wow, it's a human being right here and now thinking about the future. Wow. It somehow takes the hooks, or unloosens the hooks, for me sometimes, of the obsession with those kinds of thoughts. So I'm not rejecting the thoughts. I'm not saying, no, you shouldn't have them. But I'm getting a different perspective on them. And in a different perspective, I'm freer of them. I'm not so caught by them. And a lot of mindfulness practice is changing the perspective of how we're present, rather than getting rid of something. Becoming free is not being rid of things, but learning to be free of them while they're there, not be troubled by them or caught by them. So our thinking is a very important part of our life. And so it's very nice that mindfulness practice includes something which is important and sometimes very healthy part of our life, sometimes an unhealthy part, causes a lot of suffering. But mindfulness can include that. And some people find it very, very helpful to start paying attention and noticing their thoughts in various ways. So before I continue talking more about how to practice mindfulness of thinking, I would like to hear from you, a few of you, hopefully, What happened to you during that last meditation when I instructed you to first label your thinking a few times, acknowledge it clearly with the thoughts before going back to your breathing? And in the end, I asked you to forget thinking breathing entirely, and just see if you can discover something about the quality of your breathing, the process of breathing, the energetics of it, the physical qualities of it, the felt sense of it. Perhaps you can be aware of the kind of sound, the quality of the inner voice, if you have words in your thoughts. So what did you find out? What did you discover? Yes?
Found it was hard to continue thinking when I was thinking about thinking.
Sometimes people find it's hard to continue thinking when you're aware of thinking, when you're trying to be mindful of it. Thoughts are kind of shy. Partly when we bring awareness to our thinking, sometimes we're no longer fueling them. There's like food in our mind. Like attention is a kind of food. And usually we're kind of feeding our thoughts by being involved with them. But if you step outside of them and just clearly see them and don't get involved in them, the food is not there anymore, and they fade away. That happens sometimes. But sometimes it doesn't happen that way. You go along happily thinking. You know, it doesn't go away so easily. Yeah, anybody else? Yes?
I don't think this is an intellectual question, but are we imagining thinking as like, this is what my brain does? It generates images, and it generates memories, and it generates memories and dreams, and then it generates thoughts and problem solving. I mean, it's just a total barrage in a lot of ways. And so, if I were to say thinking, I was thinking, I'd be saying thinking the entire time. So just as a point of clarification, are we imagining that thinking means like all cognitive processes?
I think it's fine. Some people think more in images than they do in words. And that's how they, you know, what's going on. Your question about meditation. There are times when thoughts quiet down almost to, you know, slow whisper or something and seemingly stop entirely. And then you have this very cute thing that happens. Then you're sitting there very peacefully, no thoughts at all, and you have this thought that says, I'm not thinking anything right now. But the amazing thing is you don't realize the paradox of what you just said. It's like sometimes, you know, we're so used to our thoughts, we don't even see them. For mindfulness practice, it's a practice primarily of paying attention to what's predominant in your experience. I distinguish between the foreground and background of awareness. So if in the foreground of awareness, we put our breath in the foreground of awareness, or in the foreground of awareness is a sound outside or something, we pay attention to what's in the foreground. If in the background there are all kinds of things and they stay in the background, then you can keep your life energy, your life focus kind of on the foreground, that's fine. But if in the background of attention, background attention might be a lot of thoughts. If that's the case, just be relaxed about that if they're in the background for the most part. Sooner or later, you probably find that thoughts come into, or images or something, come into the foreground. That's when we take them up as part of the meditation. Part of mindfulness, you clearly acknowledge that's what's going on. But I would like to hear more about your experiences. I can't believe that, you know, this many people didn't have any experience at all, you know. Yes?
I kept wanting to not only the kind of thinking, oh, I'm writing a conversation that I have in the other day, or I'm planning how I'm going to have tomorrow. But I wanted to sort of get it, I wanted to quantify, well, how many of, you know, how obsessed am I with this conversation or with this whatever, as a way to know what's on my mind?
The question is how obsessed you are?
Yeah, or I wanted a sense of the volume of what certain kinds of thoughts, so that I could know that part of my mind, which I don't usually pay attention to. Meditating lets me pay attention to these random thoughts.
Right.
So what's exciting about it for me is I'm getting to know what these random thoughts are, but I feel like I want to have a sense of, I want to sort of hold them and see, well, what is this and how often do I have this?
Good.
But then if I do that, I'm not changing the process. This is part of
I think I understand what you're saying. What you're saying is that You're trying to distinguish, you're distinguishing between mindfulness, which is not trying to do anything, just except be clearly aware of what's happening, versus trying to analyze what the experience is like, trying to get really investigate in some detailed way. If you've never, ever really investigated your thinking before that with any real clarity, it's fine to analyze and spend some time doing that. Just be clear that it's not the same thing as mindfulness. And so it's fine to do. Sometimes it becomes very obvious what the common themes are. You know, you're staying with your breath, you notice your mind has wandered away, you notice thinking, you let go and you come back to your breathing, great. Off you go again, thinking, come back to your breathing, great. 300, 400, 500 times. After a while, you kind of catch, wait a minute, I think I'm always planning. And so then you kind of naturally that way, oh yeah, it's a lot of, and you notice, oh yeah, a big proportion of what I do is planning, or remembering, or repeating conversations, or... And so sometimes it's very useful to notice the patterns. Because only noticing the patterns can you really acknowledge clearly how predominant it is, what's really going on.
But if you're noticing the patterns, that's analytical. You were saying if it's analytical, it's not mindful.
If the pattern becomes obvious, then instead of using the name the label thinking, you might label it planning, or remembering, as a way of clearly acknowledging, because you see what it is. So you're not analyzing it. It's like you see clearly. It's like if a person walks into this room and you don't know the person, you know, I don't know that person, but it's a friend, you say, oh, there's George. You know, you don't have to analyze it. So if you had the same thought, kind of theme, 500 times, after a while, you kind of, it's really obvious. That's planning. Make some sense? Yes.
I don't remember recognizing my thoughts as they're happening. I remember thinking about them after they happen. So I'd be meditating and I'd come back to my breath and I'd think, oh, I was thinking. It seems like I'm a few moments
behind. Uh-huh. Great. What was it that prompted you to go back to your breathing?
I'm not sure. I felt like I wasn't present.
Uh-huh. So some sense of not being present. And then once you came back to your breathing, then you recognized you weren't so present because you were involved in your thoughts. It seems reasonable. It's fine. I don't know. I think with time, you might be able to, your mindfulness might become sharper and more present, that you actually might notice the process of getting lost in thoughts, and, you know, rather than kind of going numb or turning off or being lost so entirely.
Several different things happening. One is like the one behind us with the thoughts of recreating stories or conversations. And then also a few times I guess kind of get into the state of mind of one of my favorite things to do on the weekends is not be asleep but not be awake and kind of do this dream that I can guide it. So I was kind of getting into that by accident, trying to say thinking, but it was carrying on anyway. And then all of a sudden, I'd be somewhere that kind of shocked me and scared me because it was a place I wasn't expecting to be at all. And then, so when I tried to get back to my breathing was not the nice in and out slow breathing. It was kind of fast, and I was almost coming out, but I wasn't as relaxed and peaceful.
Yeah.
So I had to kind of get back to where I was again. It was a bit of a struggle.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't know what happened. I can imagine some things. One is that you're saying the weekends you kind of let your mind wander freely in a sense, but you also direct it into some fantasies, some places you want to go. And what was happening here was that you weren't directing it so much. The mind was directing itself. And what sometimes can happen in meditation or that kind of level of relaxation is that areas of our psyche which often are had repressed or denied or pushed aside finally have a chance to surface. And part of the value of meditation is to have some of these hidden corners of our attic or whatever reveal themselves. And sometimes it's our beauty that's in the shadow, and sometimes it's our demons in the shadow. But it's just, it comes up. And if you're always involved in directing what's supposed to happen, you don't let the unknown a chance for it to surface. So an important part of meditation is giving up control, which for some people is very difficult because that's what they're holding on the tightest, is trying to control. Yes?
A week or so ago, you gave an analogy to getting caught up in your thoughts. And you were saying about a train going by, and then suddenly a boxcar goes by that's kind of interesting, and before you know it, you're in Portland. And I find that I keep thinking of that where I'm meditating, and suddenly I say, oh, I'm in Portland again. So I bring myself back. That's kind of how I feel, where I just, without realizing it, I'm somewhere else.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And for the most part, I feel like my meditation experience is pretty much of two flavors. One is when I'm tired, and one is otherwise when I'm not. And it's not terribly subtle at this point. And when you give instructions, I don't feel like I have the power to really control the quality. It's pretty much the same flavor.
When I give instructions, you don't have to, what do you mean by the quality? Yeah, because I'm not
emotions or be aware of something.
Oh, that way. Oh, so in the class, I'm kind of you're kind of doing a systematic way, but when you have the full instructions, you don't have to be looking for some particular quality. You're just mindful of what comes to you. So, one day you sit down and it's mostly emotion meditation you do, because there's a lot of emotions going on. You're mindful of emotions as they are. Sometimes you sit down and you can stay with your breath, no problem at all. Other times it's physical sensations that become predominant. Some other time it might actually be your neighbors, you know, making all this loud noise. You're listening meditation. Isn't that interesting? Hopefully it's pleasant, but who knows? So it's a training in learning how to bring a meditative awareness, an accepting awareness, a peaceful awareness to whatever is happening that's predominant in our experience. So it's a training to learn how to find our peace with what's happening, as opposed to trying making something special happen so we can be peaceful. So you don't have to. So you can just be very relaxed. So in the class, I'm saying now be aware of awareness and today thoughts. But if today wasn't a day for thinking, it's okay. Is that my responding to your concern?
Yeah. Who is it that notices thinking?
In Buddhism, Buddhist psychology says there's no need to posit that question. I'm making it unduly complicated. There is awareness of thinking going on, but it's not necessary to posit a who that's being aware. It's just that's a natural part of the psyche, is the ability to be aware of what's happening. And, if you start positing who, you end up in a metaphysical quagmire very quickly. And that's not very helpful for the process. Now, what I assume in the questioning, perhaps, maybe I'm wrong, is that some people are so closely identified with their thoughts they think they are their thoughts, or they believe that every thought they have must be true because it's their thought. Or they're so closely identified with their thinking that who they are as a self is almost synonymous with thinking. And it becomes the idea of not thinking or having thoughts become quiet or go to the background is very frightening, because who are they then? So who are you when you're not thinking? And part of the challenge of this is that pretty much all the ways in which we identify ourselves or define ourselves, hold on to some concept or self-image of ourselves, is done through the vehicle of thought. And one of the reasons some people don't want to let go of their thinking is that then the very idea of who they have that they've held on to for security will no longer be there. And then the question is, who am I when I'm not thinking? Is a very interesting one. Who are you when you're not thinking? If you can't think about who you're thinking, who are you? What are you? What's going on? My hope for you is not that you answer the question necessarily, who are you? But to realize there's more to who you are than your thoughts. Your thoughts are just a little part of your, who your being is. And you can rest in a much wider, more expansive sense of self than just in, you know, just your thoughts. But more profoundly, what I hope is you learn to trust that you don't have to hold on to your thoughts. You don't have to only experience your life through your thoughts. And you can feel kind of being, you can find a place of being deeply at home in yourself without having to mediate your experience of self through your thinking. So maybe you got a little glimmer of that by being the watcher, watching your thinking during the end of the meditation. Where I asked you, just think away, I said. Think all you want. And just watch that. See what that's like. And the question was, who's watching? What's that part? So instead of, rather than asking who, I could say, trust that part. If you trust that, what happens then to your life? So maybe one more. Anybody else? So what happened? Do you notice anything about the quality of that voice, the tone of the inner voice? Does that make sense, that instruction, or is that kind of, what did you find out? Were you surprised at all, or you know this all too well? Yeah.
The tone of the voice changed depending on what tone I was in.
Great. So different flavors. Mm-hmm. Someone else?
I had humor, and I was really trying hard to like let that go, you know, because I'm like, oh my God, I'm gonna laugh. And all of a sudden, I saw my face smile. It was really weird because I was so intense sitting here. And all of a sudden, I got really giddy, and then I got flushed, and I thought, God, has that ever happened?
Sure. So. If thoughts are in the background, for the purposes of mindfulness meditation, you just leave them there. And you stay with your breath the best you can. It's really helpful to give some priority, some real emphasis on your breathing. But if you find that thoughts come into the foreground, become the predominant experience, then you might want to acknowledge the fact that you're thinking. Just clearly acknowledge it, very matter-of-factly, just simply accepting it being there, and just maybe say, quietly or non-verbally or verbally in your mind, say, thinking, and recognize thinking is happening. If it's a relatively mild thought, you're not so engaged in the thought, you might just go back to your breathing and let it, you know, it recedes to the background pretty easily. If it's not so mild, or if it keeps reoccurring, you know, you go back to your breath and then immediately it's back again to the foreground. Or if it doesn't want to go in the background, just doesn't go away, just really strong, then rest assured that's okay. What you want to do now is mindfulness of thinking more thoroughly. You want to sort of open your awareness more fully and really see, almost as if you're like you're in a meditation hall here and you're having all these thoughts, but it's almost as if it's the person behind you who's projecting their thoughts into your skull. And that looks projector, a thought projector. It's not your thoughts. You don't even worry about your thoughts. And you're, wow, what is that person thinking about? You know, you're really curious. You know, you've never been inside someone else's head before. And it'd be really interesting to kind of know how other people think. And so you watch with great curiosity. Just really clearly watch and see. And I'm sure other people are as curious about, you know, would be curious about your thoughts. So just, you know, imagine how you are. You know, find some way of looking at it. Very relaxed, very open. Being mindful of thinking. And maybe name it a few times. Thinking. If it's obvious, name what it kind of thought it is, planning. And sometimes looking really head on, really clearly, being very fully cognizant of the fact that you're thinking is enough to take the juice away from the thoughts and they fade away. And then you can go back to your breathing. You're not trying to make them go away. But they might go away. Sometimes the thoughts are much more active and they don't go away. Or they keep reoccurring, you know, right at the tail of going away, they come back or something. Then begin investigating more, you know, more clearly other things going on as part of that thinking process. With mindfulness, it's always helpful to try to connect to the felt sense of your experience, whatever it might be. The physical experience of what it's like in your body. If your thinking is really compulsive, obsessive, very powerful, almost certainly you'll find some physical manifestation of that thinking process. You know, sometimes when people frown when they're thinking really hard, you know, or they clench their jaws when they're thinking really hard, or they pucker their lips, or, you know, there's all kinds of things that people do, right? Sometimes people tighten up the back of their neck, or there's various kinds of physical things people do. Sometimes it feels like pressure inside the skull, or 10,000 bumblebees kind of, you know, buzzing around, all this energy. See if you can find the energetics or the physical sensation connected to that kind of thinking. And then ground your attention there. Just feel that part of the thinking. It's part of a whole package. Just feel that part. And the advantage is the physical aspect of thinking is not the story of what you're thinking about. So you're grounding yourself in what's happening with thinking without getting tripped over by the story. And that's the biggest challenge with thinking, is that we often get caught by the storyline. And off we go making more stories or thinking more. So can you be aware of the process of thinking without getting caught? And one way is to be in the body, feel the physical side of it. And it's very helpful sometimes, I find. If I'm really agitated, I don't watch the thoughts so much. They might be really taking me away. I'm aware of the energetics of having agitated thoughts. And I let them just feel that in the body, hold that in the body. The body be the container of those. And let it just kind of be a float around inside my awareness. Usually very quickly it settles down then. But if I engage with the thoughts themselves, you know, thinking is kind of like a maze that has no exit. And so people go in there, and sometimes you go into thinking, trying to think, well, I'm going to solve this with further thinking. And there are some problems that don't get solved with more thinking. The thinking actually keeps you stuck in the maze. And so finding some way to step outside of the maze is the only real thing that's going to help. And so awareness is that which can provide that. Awareness and getting calm and watching it. So let go of trying to think about things. One of my teachers said, during meditation, there's nothing whatsoever that's worth thinking about. It's a very strong statement. Nothing at all worth thinking about. You might try that as a little experiment for a session of meditation, taking the attitude, there's nothing that's worth thinking about, absolutely, in the whole planet, during this next half an hour of meditation. And just let go of whatever arises. I mentioned this once during a class I taught, and someone afterwards came up to me and said, oh, that's what they... I used to be part of a religious cult, and so I studied cults and all that, how they work. And that's one of the things they tell people sometimes, that nothing's worth thinking about. Don't think. So I don't say this very much anymore. I don't want to be associated with a cult. But, you know, at least for 30 minutes, you can take it on as an assumption and see what you can learn. But mostly you don't need to think about many things you think about in meditation. That's pretty obvious, isn't it? Isn't it? Yes?
So just to clarify, there is a prejudice in favor of quietness, in favor of silence. But if the thoughts keep coming back, being mindful of the thoughts is also a way of mindfulness.
Technically, there's no prejudice at all towards anything. The prejudice is against being caught by anything. That's being caught by anything. Being hooked, being kind of the velcroing to this experience, or being attached to it, or obsessed by it, or feeling compulsed by it, or something. The compulsive quality. It just happens, and thinking is an area where there's a lot of obsession, a lot of hooks, a lot of caughtness. If you're caught, you're not free. And so you're not trying to stop having thoughts. You're trying to have your thoughts not be a place you get caught. So if you're free with your thoughts, you could easily put down a thought freely. I don't think about that and let go of it. No problem. Just at moment's notice, you can let go because there's no hooks to it. And most of us find we don't have that. So don't worry about that. Just practice mindfulness of your thoughts. If there's a very repetitive theme in your thoughts, endless planning, endless conversations, whatever, it's usually a symptom that there's some emotion that's connected to that thinking process. That's the fuel or the factory for that kind of thinking. And if you don't acknowledge the emotion is going to keep spitting out more of those kinds of thoughts. So the classic example I give is with planning. If you plan a lot in meditation, you can chance, not always the case, sometimes there's other causes, but the primary emotional factory for planning and meditation is worry or apprehension, fear. And if you let go of your planning what you're going to do tomorrow, and you're very good, you can see it when it rises, or there's planning, you note it, planning, or thinking, it disappears, you go back to your meditation, great, you can do it. Then it comes right back, more planning. The reason it comes right back is that the anxiety, or the aversion, the fear that was fueling the first time is still there. So you've noticed the thinking has dropped away, but the underlying anxiety in the system is still there, the worry is still there. It's a little agitation. And that worry then will become a searching for thoughts, or will spit out thoughts, make their own thoughts. So sometimes you need to go down and actually acknowledge the emotion, do mindfulness of the emotion, if there's really repetitive thinking. It could be fear, it could be excitement and joy sometimes is what the hook, where the hook is. It could be anger, it could be regret, aversion, repeating a conversation, a lot of remembering. It might be, you have aversion or embarrassment or shame, and that's the hook because what you said or whatever. So all kinds of things might be there emotionally. But if you find yourself continually hooked and caught by your thinking, you might drop down into your body and find out, is there an emotion that's connected to this? And if you connect to that emotion fully, mindfully, then there's no need sometimes for the thoughts to occur. It's almost as if the thoughts are like a flag that you're waving, that your emotion is waving, saying, hey, dummy, hey, you, pay attention over here. And it isn't that you're not supposed to pay attention to the flag, which most of us do, the thought, and then we think about the flag. It's the person that's holding the flag that wants attention, which is the emotion. So don't confuse the flag for what the flag's pointing at. Does that make sense? Yes?
So during meditation, if you find it's happening, how do you, while you're meditating, acknowledge the emotion and move on from that emotion?
Oh, you don't have to.
Not get hooked into the emotion.
Oh, usually we get hooked by our emotions by the stories we make about it, which is more thoughts. And there can be stories connected to some incident that triggered the emotions. It could be stories we have about the existence of this emotion. Oh, this is too much, I can't stand it, or this is a great emotion, I can't wait to go tell my neighbors about this emotion. And and so there's some kind of hook. And it's usually a story we make around it. We're actually hooked to a story, not the emotion. And so one of the ways, antidote to being hooked by storyline, is to drop into the body and feel that emotion in your body. Where in your body do you feel that emotion? Is it tightening in your stomach, or tightening your chest, or warmth in your cheeks, or every emotion we have, for the most part, has a physical aspect to it. And so you're asked then to bring mindfulness to that physical part, and then you're present for the emotion for sure, because that's as much part of the emotion as anything else. But the body is not a story. So if you keep your attention there, you're not letting your attention going to be more. But attention is kind of like food. And so where your attention goes feeds wherever you pay, in a sense, feeds something. If you don't choose where this wonderful, precious food goes, and you're unaware, you might be feeding all kinds of things which are completely unproductive, maybe worse for you. And it becomes habit formation, all kinds of things. But if you can take a little bit of direction, put a little bit of direction in, you take some control of your awareness, keep it aware, and then stay aware of what's happening. And feed that capacity to be aware and not caught by things. Your life will go a lot better. But if you don't feed that and let your awareness get sucked in to thoughts and story making, then you're feeding that whole world. Other thoughts you want to ask about any of this? One of the more amazing things is if you start tracking a little bit what you think about while you're thinking, is you might notice patterns. And some people will notice what a high percentage of your thoughts are self-referential in nature. Me, myself, and mine, some way or other. And you know, if someone walked next to you all day, all night, for weeks on end, talking into your ear as much as you talk to yourself, constantly, no stopping, you'd probably ask them to be quiet after a while. You'd probably get a little more assertive in that request after a while. You might be going crazy listening to that person. You might doubt the person's sanity. You know, and then you start realizing how repetitive that person is. The person said the same thing 500 times now. You know, a person must be crazy. What's amazing is that we do this to ourselves. And what's most amazing, I find, is that after 500 times of having the same kind of thought, we're still just as interested. Concerns about me, myself, and mine is one of the most powerful hooks that keeps us from being free. And what we're trying to find in meditation by learning to be aware of everything is to learn to trust our life in a very deep, fundamental way. To have a deep, deep, deep abiding trust. Enough trust so we realize we don't have to put up defenses, we don't have to have these hooks, we don't have to hold on to things for security. We find some very deep wellsprings of well-being, security, happiness that's not dependent on holding on or hooking on to anything. So let's end with a short sitting. Now, if this instruction on mindfulness of thinking seems too complicated to you, you're welcome just to forget everything I said and just, whenever you notice yourself thinking, let go and come back to your breathing. That's powerful in and of itself. And anything else you remember or decide to take up from the instructions I gave today, just consider that a bonus. So without even out any preparations at all, notice the quality of your thinking brain, thinking mind right now. Some people, when they're sensitive to their thinking mind, to the quality, to how it is, it can actually feel quite exhausted and weary from its relentless concerns. And then take a long, deep breath, and on the exhale, kind of relax your thinking mind. Soften it. Let it take a vacation. Nothing to think about. And let your breathing fill your awareness. One of the most common places or point in the cycle of breathing that people get lost in thoughts is at the end of the out-breath, second half of the out-breath, the end of it, the gap, the end of the out-breath. Stay a little bit relaxed but vigilant, relaxed but alert, so that you let go of your thoughts with the out-breath, rather than letting that be a a doorway for getting lost in your thoughts. At the end of the out-breath, let go of thinking. Breathing in and breathing out. Meditation is about being with what's actually happening. And to some degree, letting yourself be relaxed with what's happening. Accepting, allowing how you are right now. But seeing if you can let the mind be alert and aware of how things are, aware of each breath, aware of your body, your emotions, your thinking if need be. If you ever have a doubt about what to do in meditation, just go back to your breathing. Let the breath be the easy default. And in the last few seconds of the sitting, see if you can bring in an element of trust in the present moment. A trust, as deep, relaxing trust as you can. Trusting life, trusting just being. Just being as you breathe. We have handouts again on the table in the chair back there, and I hope you're reading those. And it'd be very nice if you did the homework. I think you'd find them very interesting and helpful overall in this process of learning mindfulness. So we have two more weeks left in the class. Next week I'm going to talk about the hindrances or the obstacles to mindfulness practice, to being aware, and some of the difficulties that might arise as we do the practice. And last week we'll talk about a number of things, but in particular, how to integrate the practice or include the practice within one's daily life. So not just mindfulness is not something you just do for meditation, but something you apply to your normal life outside of meditation as well. So I wish you a wonderful week, and I wish you wonderful meditations. I hope that you give it your best. Thank you.